The following podcast will contain spoilers and explicit language. Hello and welcome to episode 41 of
Yeah, It's That Bad.
My name is Joel.
And I'm Martin.
And I'm Kevin.
This is a show that looks at supposedly bad movies and asks the question, is it really that bad? And what that boils down to is that we look at movies that are rotten on Rotten Tomatoes and reevaluate that score. Does it really deserve to be that low? Tonight's movie is 2004's Van Helsing, directed by Stephen Sommers, starring Hugh Jackman, Kate Beckinsale, Richard Roxburgh, David Wenham, Will Kemp, Kevin J. O'Connor, and Shuler Hensley. Van Helsing is a 2004 action horror film. The film is an homage and tribute to the Universal horror monster films from the 1930s and 40s. This film currently holds a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes. How about a plot synopsis?
Famed monster hunter Dr. Gabriel Van Helsing heads to Eastern Europe to battle with Count Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein's monster. By his side is the ravishing Anna, a member of a family committed to ridding the world of evil.
Okay, Van Helsing. This was the winner of the listener's choice poll. So let's see. What's your history with this, Martin?
I've seen it before. I don't remember it being this ridiculous, to be honest with you.
I've never seen this movie before.
Okay, me neither. I'm a Van Helsing virgin yet again. And I'm going to go on a limb and say that I never wanted to see this movie, ever. I remember when it came out in 2004, and I was dead set against ever watching this thing.
I think I was right there with you. I think that was at the age where we were like, you know what, this is ridiculous. Let's not just go to a summer blockbuster.
At that point, we were way past our Lost in Space days.
Yes.
We would watch anything, right?
Yep. No, I watched it on TV. I didn't watch it in the
theater. And on DVD, and on VHS, laser disc.
Yeah. I watched it on.
I have it on every format.
I have it in microfiche.
All right, so let's do what we always do at the top of the show. We'll discuss the actors one by one, and we'll see how you thought they did. First up, the jacked man, Hugh Jackman.
It looked like he was wearing a wig.
He was.
Was he?
He was wearing hair extensions.
It was really poorly done. That doesn't reflect on his acting in any way, shape, or form, but I mean, man, did it bother me the entire movie. His acting? It was campy, but that's on purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess we'll talk about that later, about the merits of this.
I mean, if it's an homage to all these really old 1940s monster flicks, then that probably is how he should be acting.
Yeah, I think he was really effective with that it was the perfect amount of campiness, I would say, whereas some of the other people maybe went a little overboard.
Well, I know who I'm going to choose for best in show, for best actor in this movie. It's not the jacked man.
What are they, animals?
Yeah, I'm going to give he gets the blue ribbon. Yeah, I thought Jackman did okay. I mean, he's Hugh Jackman. He's always awesome, but they didn't give him much to do in this. I mean, he did a lot of physical things, but he didn't say anything worthwhile in this movie.
I thought he was very physically impressive.
He can pretty much do anything at this point in my book, and he's all right.
Yeah, he's got a get out of jail free card for me. Yeah. He's done so many cool things. Yeah. Like, he can do whatever the hell he wants.
What about Wolverine? You're going to give him a buy on that movie?
I don't want to watch that movie. I've never seen it, and I guess I'm going to have to watch it for this thing at some point.
I've seen it, and he doesn't get a buy from me on that one. That's not okay.
Why
you're letting him go on that? That's not okay.
The first time I saw that, I didn't like it. But every time I've seen it since then, it's grown on me.
What, like a cancerous tumor?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, all right. Next up, the triumphant return of the lovely, the ravishing Miss Kate Beckinsale, or Mrs. Kate Beckinsale, I should say. We're now 3 for 3 with Kate Beckinsale. This is the third movie I've ever seen with her in it, and it's another movie that we reviewed on the show. What'd you guys think of her performance?
I'm gonna say this about her. In a movie where everybody was purposely being over the top and campy, she was trying to act.
Her at her best was campy crap.
Is campy crap that's worse than people trying to be campy?
I didn't think she was very good. You know, I didn't see the other two movies that you guys did with her in it. And at first, I thought this is the first movie I've seen with her in it at all. And I looked it up. She was in The Aviator. I totally forgot she was in that.
She was in that?
And she was in Pearl Harbor. And I totally forgot she was in that movie either. Two completely forgettable movies, I guess. But
she was the love interest in Pearl Harbor. Like, she was the supporting actress.
I think I wiped that movie from my memory. I hated it so much. I'm pretty sure. But
Episode 48, Pearl Harbor.
The accent that she was faking this whole movie was driving me nuts.
Horrendous.
It was terrible.
Atrocious.
All of the accents were horrible.
Reprehensible.
But hers especially stood out.
Repugnant.
She's She's very pretty, though.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she was pretty in this movie. Like, there's a scene towards the end where she's at a ball and she's wearing this red dress.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Okay, next up, Count Dracula, Richard Roxburgh. What'd you think?
Terrible. Worst actor in this movie, in my opinion. His accent was terrible. He sounded American, making fun of people that have bad accents, almost.
Okay.
He's really bothered me, this guy.
Yeah, no, I thought that he was a terrible, terrible, terrible actor.
He was like a Hot Topic version of Dracula.
You know what was weird? He was like extremely emo.
Yeah.
So I was...
Was it scary in the least?
There was a lot of one-liners in this movie, but his were by far the most ridiculous. Let me see. I got some here. I don't feel. I don't love.
Oh,
I don't hate.
Oh, yeah.
I don't breathe. I'm hollow and I will live forever. And I'm like... Ugh.
You know what was great about that line reading right there? Is that he goes, I don't feel. I feel
but,
nothing.
Yeah, yet he's freaking
screaming.
Out.
He's screaming while he says it. And then he's like, I don't feel anything. No joy. But then when he says that stupid speech, he's laughing. One thing I'll say about this guy who played Dracula, I have to give him a lot of respect here. So, in the movie, he had like three brides. And of the three brides, I thought one of them was substantially more attractive than the others.
Redhead?
Yeah, it has to be the redhead.
I am in complete disagreement.
Oh!
The
brunette.
Oh, I disagree.
Was physically more attractive.
I thought she was amazingly
attractive.
Yeah, she was
gorgeous. She was gorgeous. The other two were...
Oh, I'd go with the redhead.
So, Dracula was married to her as a bride. And in real life, 1 year later, they got married. Little love on the Van Helsing set. Good job, bro. Okay, Will Kemp, the friar guy. What'd you think?
He was comedic.
Yeah, it was all right.
And he relieved me.
I felt great relief.
The comic tension was lifted with his presence.
There's something about the way he was talking. I don't know. Like, this is another one of those instances where I felt like everything that he said sounded to me like it was 80 yard over again. Like, it didn't sound like it was coming out of his mouth. Mm. It's another one of those weird instances. I don't know.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
I guess I'm a weirdo. All right, next up, Kevin J. O'Connor. He was Igor. Now, funny thing about this guy is, remember the Igor character in this? The hunchback helping out? The whole time I was watching this character, I was like, you know what? This guy reminds me a lot of that rat-faced dude from The Mummy. Guess what? Same dude.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, Stephen Sommers really likes this guy and puts him in a lot of his movies. He was in G.I. Joe, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. He's Dr. Mindbender.
Oh, okay.
Stephen Sommers, he uses a lot of, I guess, the same...
Yeah, he's a latter-day Wes Anderson. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
This doesn't make any sense because Wes Anderson is still a director.
I was kind of hoping for some Frasier cameo here, but
me too. I thought Brendan Fraser was going to show up during the ball scene.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Perfect.
Brendan Fraser was in this.
When?
He was Frankenstein. He was the monster.
Anyway, I liked Kevin J. O'Connor's performance as Igor. I liked it. I thought he really played that part the way it should have been played, and he was having fun, and I was having fun watching him.
Yeah, it was all right.
And finally, Shuler Hensley. He was Frankenstein's monster. Which, by the way, let's set up the convention right now. There's always that big misconception. Everybody knows that the monster is not called Frankenstein. Frankenstein's the guy that made him. But in popular culture, everybody just calls the monster Frankenstein. In fact, in the movie, there's an instance where the friar calls him Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's the monster of Dr. Frankenstein.
No, he just says, we have to kill Frankenstein. He says it in this movie.
Oh, yeah,
I wrote that down.
I know, but the monster is referred...
Yeah, so I guess in this movie, they get around that. They have the monster call Frankenstein his father, which I guess would make him his son. Thus, his last name would be Frankenstein, I guess. Mm. All right, so what did you guys think of Frankenstein? Let's just call him Frankenstein.
I liked him, actually.
I thought he was the best actor in this movie.
I can't say that. It's difficult because, like, he's behind this mask, right?
You can't really
see his facial
behind, like, I'm just going by like, what he's saying, like the thing, like the way he's behind, delivering his lines.
His line delivery is good, but I agree with Kevin. He's behind like this CG mask. I can't see his facial expressions, and that's like a huge part.
Let me ask you a question. How do you think Hugo Weaving did as V in V for Vendetta?
Phenomenally.
Could you see his face?
Yeah, he was me. He was you.
He was my father.
He was my father.
He was my
and
mother.
My brother. And so, yeah, and I know what my face looks like, so.
Okay.
And I give myself a 5 out of 5.
Well,
Alright,
fine. Bulletproof logic. I'm not even going to attempt to argue that. Anyway, there's a reason why this guy was so good at playing Frankenstein, because when this movie was starting filming, he had just wrapped up performing in Young Frankenstein on Broadway. So he's playing the same character. So he knew what he was doing, and it showed, because he was really good.
Yeah.
He was the best thing in this movie. Everybody else was a joke.
He just wanted to exist.
Did you just call Jackman a joke?
Hugh Jokeman?
How dare you, sir?
All right, that's enough of that. Let me get into the brief history of Van Helsing.
How brief is it?
10 pages.
Yeah, seriously.
Despite popular online rumors stating that this was originally planned as a direct sequel to Dracula, with Anthony Hopkins reprising his role, this is not the case. Stephen Sommers thought up the concept for the film while vacationing after he had completed The Mummy Returns. Director Stephen Sommers claimed in an interview he changed the main character's name from Abraham Van Helsing to Gabriel Van Helsing, as he did not think he could have a lead character named Abraham. The Irishman who wrote Dracula, Bram Stoker, named the character after himself, Bram being a shortening of Abraham. Stephen Sommers wanted Kate Beckinsale for the role of Anna, but feared it was too similar in tone to the vampire werewolf film Underworld, which she was shooting at the time, and he didn't ask her. Eventually, her agent got Sommers to send the script, and Beckinsale immediately signed on. The place where Van Helsing and Anna fight Dracula's three wives is the same place where they filmed Frankenstein, 1931, Dracula, and the Wolfman. The place is called the Court of Miracles, and it is also found at the studio tour at Universal Studios Hollywood. A spin-off TV series was pitched to NBC to have been called Transylvania. It was to have featured a Wild West sheriff taken to Europe to battle monsters. That sounds terrible. With occasional guest appearances by Hugh Jackman as Gabriel Van Helsing. The series idea was stillborn, partly because makeup effects and location shooting in Romania would have been too expensive, and partly because the film's opening weekend box office was far below expectations, which also doomed a proposed sequel to the film. The movie starts off with yet another Stephen Sommers cold open flashback
scene. Loves these things.
He loves flashbacks. The Mummy, G.I. Joe.
How many are black and white, though?
This is the only one.
This is the only one.
And quite frankly, I thought this was really cool that it's in black and white. Right off the bat, I think Stephen Sommers does a smart thing where he starts the movie off in black and white, and it's like he's redoing Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Like, the Frankenstein's there, he's making the monster, Dracula's there. This is just like a movie called House of Dracula, where, like, all the monsters were in it back in the 30s. I thought that was a really good idea, because right off the bat, Stephen Sommers is like, look, I'm trying to make a movie in this style. Black and white, it's fun.
No, yeah, it definitely...
What do you think of this?
It sets the stage for what he's trying to accomplish, and it lets the moviegoer know kind of what to expect. It definitely sets a tone and a motif for the movie as a whole. So I thought it was a great stylistic choice. I definitely agree with you.
I think the opening sequence of this movie is the best part of the movie. How about this? Let me throw this on the table. I think this entire movie should have been black and white. It would have benefited immensely if it was all in black and white. And here's why. First, it would have set the tone perfectly. Mm-hmm. Second, the CG monsters would have blended in better with their environments. Yeah. Because if you remember The Mist, remember that movie?
Yeah.
That came out on DVD and you could watch it in black and white, and the CG creatures look a lot better because everything was the same color palette. What kind of teeth did Dracula have? Shark? Piranha? Or...
The vampires had six different types of teeth in this movie.
Alright, when they're transforming from... Alright, when they're in a human form, they have your traditional vampire teeth where it's just the two canines enlarged. Mm-hmm. Then they can turn into like harpies.
Yeah.
Where they're like humanoid bat, half man bat. And those have like just all shark teeth. And then there's like a third type of like transformation that they could do where they're like just like a complete beast, and that has like a like a retractable like
beast.
Like piranha-esque barracuda like jaw that shoots out of their mouth.
Yeah,
I didn't understand what they were going for here. Like,
no, it seemed like every time they had a vampire open its mouth, it had a different set of teeth.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that I noticed that was strange. It didn't show them actually using their teeth to actually rip anybody apart or actually drink their blood. It showed them biting someone's neck and then being like, you know, bite them and then let go and throw them away.
To keep the rating down, I guess?
Yeah, that's...
What was this, PG-13?
It was.
Yeah,
I mean, it get too gruesome. It turns to R and you're not...
Yeah, yeah,
get
12-year-old
boys.
But then in the transformation to from man to wolf, like, he's literally ripping his flesh off his body.
No blood.
It is bloodless. Okay, so after this opening sequence, we have 1 year later, which is a lot better than G.I. Joe's In the Not Too Distant Future or whatever. So 1 year later, Van Helsing, he's in Paris, and he's hunting down who?
Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. They tossed that in there.
I thought that was the coolest part of this movie.
Hyde?
Yeah, I liked his character a lot.
I thought he looked terrible. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde are in this movie, and Hyde, the monster's form, he looked like he was a giant plastic CG man who scratched his ass or something for a couple seconds.
I didn't think it was looked that bad. Considering it's 2004,
mm-hmm.
It was all right.
Wasn't Lord of the Rings in this time period?
Yeah.
just shot you down.
In this scene, Hugh Jackman reminded me of Batman.
He did a lot of very Batman-y things. I actually wrote that down.
I didn't understand why Mr. Hyde had like super agility and like he was immortal, basically. I mean, he was getting shot at. Nothing was
hurting him. Here's my theory.
Okay.
They wanted to merge the Humpback of Notre Dame with Hyde. And because in the old Hunchback movies, he was agile and he would like flip around and stuff. That's okay. My theory. Perhaps I'm giving it a little bit too much credence. I don't know.
Like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but the first shot of this movie is him taking off a French wanted poster that looks like it was taken from the Wild West.
Yeah.
It was set up in the exact same way. It's like Van Helsing wanted for murder.
Here's an interesting fun fact about this movie. I don't know if you noticed this, but this movie didn't have opening credits and it didn't have an opening title card. That wanted poster served as the title of the movie.
It wasn't even in English.
I didn't even notice that till you just said that.
That was a daring choice from Stephen Sommers. Mm. Perhaps he's a little more of an auteur than you give him credit for, Kevin.
Oh, wow. We're throwing auteur out there, huh? Whoa.
He's an auteur like no other. All right, so next stop, we come to find out that Van Helsing works for the Vatican. He is a Vatican assassin. Isn't that what Charlie Sheen said he was?
Yes! So he shows up at the Vatican, and it's plainly obvious. He's just walking from one green screen to another at this point.
No, the Vatican City set?
It looked so fake.
Yeah, you're right. It did look fake when he was walking through the church. All right, so we come to find out that Hugh Jackman, lo and behold, he has the most original Hollywood character trait of all time. He's got amnesia.
Yeah.
Great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Why are you fighting? I don't know. I can't remember.
That's why I fight. I fight to find out.
Yeah, so he sent out a mission to Transylvania to kill Dracula. All right, so when they get to Transylvania, we get to see Kate Beckinsale and her brother fighting a CG werewolf. What'd you think, Kevin? I thought you must have really liked the special effect.
Actually, the werewolves, I didn't mind the werewolf special effects. I thought they were okay.
Hey.
I'll put it this way. Fur, it's more difficult to make fur look like plastic because the flesh in this movie, especially on the monster of Dr. Frankenstein, but also on the vampires, looked like it was made out of the same material that Stretch Armstrong is made out of.
Mm. Silly putty?
Essentially.
Gack?
It was made out of phloem. Everything, phloem. Yeah, their whole body is made out of phloem, okay?
So Kate Beckinsale's fighting this werewolf. Her brother gets bitten. Blah, blah, blah.
I actually thought that was a fun scene. That probably was my favorite scene in this movie.
Why is that?
There was actual tension.
Yeah, there was. Because he dropped his gun. Like, get his gun and all that stuff.
There was some good action. The CG was okay in my eyes.
The accents were perfect.
They didn't talk that much, so maybe that was part of it.
They almost didn't talk at all. The only speaking that was done was Anna yelling at
with
them
their fists.
Not to shoot them with regular bullets, but if she didn't want them to shoot with regular bullets, maybe she should have communicated that to her before they set up this elaborate trap.
Yeah. Wasn't there a team meeting beforehand?
So let's just move on to the harpy attack. So as far as I'm concerned,
no, we're not done here yet.
Okay.
So they get the werewolf right in the cage.
Right.
It's lifted up what like 100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
With the brother on it, and he jumps off onto the tree. Right.
Yeah.
So he's like 100 feet in the air up in the tree.
He's holding onto a rope. They like lifted the rope up.
Yeah. He jumped off of it and he jumped onto a tree limb. But he's way up in the sky on the tree.
Yeah. Like a fall from there would kill you.
Okay. Right. So the cage falls. Werewolf breaks out. Starts chasing after Kate Beckinsale. Right. They're running full speed. How does the brother get out of the tree, run faster than the werewolf, and cut him off to shoot him?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either. I have no idea.
Kevin. 7.
No, that doesn't make any sense, because it looked like they spanned like half a mile in 30 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, that werewolf was booking it. There's no way that guy could have run that
fast. Kate Beckinsale was beating it, too, which means that she was running like
50
miles an hour.
How about this question? How are they fighting a werewolf in the middle of the day?
It was
daytime.
It was daytime. It was dusky.
In previous podcasts, I have told you that the moon is out on a third of the days of the month during the day.
But not in the universe of this movie.
How do you know that?
Because they show that you turn into the full moon in this movie.
Which apparently is like every other day.
That's true.
There's just werewolves like all over the place.
No, they said when the moon is full or when the wolfbane blooms.
So does that mean like the earth is spinning way faster on this planet?
Apparently.
No, maybe there's a plant that's consistently blooming in Transylvania. How many times do people fall off of 1,000-foot cliffs into gorges in this movie?
A lot.
like 45 times, and I don't think it kills any of them.
All right, so now let's go to the heartbeat.
All right, yeah, okay.
So as far as I'm concerned, this is the most iconic scene in the movie. When I think of Van Helsing the movie, I think of that shot of him holding a crossbow.
And her going.
And the heartbeat coming down, and like the camera going everywhere, because that was in the commercials over and over and over and over again. So now that I finally got to see this sequence, I kind of liked it. What'd you guys think of it?
It was all right. I really, really disliked the way the female vampires looked in this movie.
The harpies, yeah.
They looked terrible. Mm-hmm. Just the character design, not even like that the CG was poor. That kind of took me out of it.
What would you have preferred them look like?
That's a really good question.
Just like women flying around?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, do that.
Flying around like Superman?
Yeah, sure.
I thought all three of them were pretty attractive, so.
They looked really good when they were in human form.
They looked really attractive, so why ugly them up like that? What's the point?
I don't know.
All right, well, I got this to say. Joel, if it bothered you that the werewolf was out during the day, did it bother you that the vampires can go out during the day? That bothered me more than anything else, that they follow Twilight rules, that, like, vampires can go out.
When
like
it's cloudy. The
Collins, when it's cloudy.
Yeah, there's still UV rays. Even though it's filtered, there's still UV rays in
there. Yeah, I know. Listen, I was warned by my mother, even when it's cloudy, to put sunscreen on when I go to the beach.
The one thing I liked about this scene is that one of the harpies picked up a cow and, like, threw it through a building.
Okay, see, I had a problem with
that. That was a nice little piece of business. I actually had a problem with that.
That
was like a Steven Spielberg kind of thing.
Because right before that, one of them picks up Kate Beckinsale, right? Then Hugh Jackman runs, jumps, and grabs onto her. And that like made them too heavy for the vampire. She dropped them because Hugh Jackman grabbed on. What do they weigh combined? Like maybe
300 pounds?
Maybe 300 tops? And then it goes and picks up a cow and throws it like it's nothing.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
There are no rules in this movie. There's none are even established.
This movie could have used a Brendan Fraser. Could have used the steady hand of a Brendan Fraser, I think. The calm, cool, collected hand of a Brendan Fraser in an action scene like this.
It bothered me that they were all like psychically linked to each other.
Yeah, when one died.
And then they would all scream in this over the top, like whoa, whoa. And then then that defeated them? It defeated all of them?
Yeah, because they had Kate Beckinsale, right? Their whole point of being there was
to get
her.
Kate Beckinsale.
So two of them have her.
Two of them have her, but then when one dies, they're just all like, defeated?
Oh, bye-bye!
And then leave.
Yeah, forget it. Even though we have you. Dead to rights. And then, we're gonna leave now.
Yeah, but okay, so this is after this whole long-winded speech, or maybe it was right before where they're like, I feel nothing. I have no love. I don't feel anything. But then they all feel each other and they all like, because of despair that one of them dies, they just all give up and emo their way back to the mall at Hot Topic or whatever.
You know, we had some good elongated mouth in this movie too.
The old Legion trick. You're right. There was a lot of stupid mouth in this.
Yep.
Yeah, Legion paid an homage to
Now, in this movie, the vampires can teleport like they could in Underworld. And by teleportation, I mean you blink and they're on the other side of the room. Now, when a creature is indestructible, can literally transcend time and space in the blink of an eye, and is mortal, how can a human being possibly hope to defeat that when you set up a character like that with these kind of rules?
You can't. And like, if you can do that, if you can just teleport from one place to another, why bother flying around? What's the point? Just teleport into Kate Beckinsale's house, grab her, teleport out. You're done.
It's not even teleporting. I assume they're moving so fast. See them, but
all right, yeah, okay. Whatever.
So then, same flying, thing. You could fly, but just fly so fast they can't see you.
They were vulnerable when they needed them to be vulnerable.
Yes,
and they were invulnerable when they needed to be invulnerable.
That's the old Superman sliding scale. One of these harpies gets killed by Van Helsing in a movie where there's a lot of really bad CG. I'm gonna have the wagging finger of shame and say that this is the worst. I'll borrow that from Ebert. This is the worst CG in the entire movie. She gets impaled with a stake or holy water or whatever, and you can clearly tell that this woman's real head is grafted on to this CG body that is wiggling around, yet her real head isn't moving at all. It looks so poor, like the connection of her head to her neck. Did anybody else notice this or just me?
Yeah.
I didn't notice it as much detail as you just did, but I just knew it looked bad.
I noticed it. It bothered me.
When we finally get our next shot of Dracula, and they show him rising from his coffin. See if you can imagine it. So imagine a human being lying on the ground, and he's frozen solid. Mm-hmm. Like, he's made out of ice.
He's, like, in ice.
He's in ice.
The way he came out of it and became unfrozen, he was, like, doing, like, a weird emo pose. Dance.
Is anybody else bothered by how they're in ice? Why are they in ice?
I have no idea why they're in ice in this movie.
Because when he goes to, I guess, copulate with his remaining brides, like, yeah, they go into like a ice universe. He's like, come my brides. And then they freeze.
Because, Martin, in Dante's Inferno...
Okay, shut up.
The devil is encased in ice.
No, he's not.
And Dracula...
No, he's not.
...is the son of the devil.
He's not encased in ice.
Air to go, air to four.
Vis-a-vis. So once he's up, when he starts walking up the wall, that was probably the worst looking thing in this movie. It didn't even look like his feet were touching the wall at certain points.
Now, remember we watched The Fly a couple, like, a month or two ago?
Yes.
Remember that, when he walked on the wall?
It looked real. Way more realistic than this.
For anybody out there that's listening to this that has seen Team America, World Police, the way that those puppets walk is the way Dracula looked like he was walking up the wall.
It's like a marionette.
This was right after Hugh Jackman hits her with the rape chloroform.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman shoots her with R-U-G-H-B, whatever, just blasts her. He puts a little roofie in her drink.
Well, she promised him a drink, and it was getting sexy. And then she's like, well, you can do it without me. He's like, well, I'll do it without you. And then he shoots it in her face, and she passes out.
What was the point of that?
He did it so that she couldn't interfere with him hunting.
But he didn't even hunt anything. Well,
no, but she was going to go out right then and there, and he wanted her to wait. But then she woke up at night anyway. Yeah, you're right. What was the point of that?
I had no idea why he gassed her. I thought I missed a line or something.
And then, but Van Helsing was there anyway. Like, yeah, like he never left.
Yeah.
It was almost like he set her up as bait.
Okay, yeah.
What a monster. Who's the real
Van Helsing's the real monster.
You know, it's around this time that Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale are running around. And Kate Beckinsale, she pauses, and they're talking to each other. And Hugh Jackman brings up something about the ocean, the sea.
Yeah, that they arrived by the sea.
Yeah, that was something that bothered me as well, because as far as I know,
Transylvania is landlocked.
Europe and Transylvania are not separated by an ocean.
Well, he said, what was it?
Adriatic sea. But that's not like...
But when you look at... there was maps of Transylvania everywhere in this movie, right? I mean, there was the big one on the wall, and then there was the one when they were trying to get to Rome later in the movie.
Yeah.
I never saw water anywhere. How did they arrive by sea?
Transylvania is landlocked. So what I really don't understand is, why would you show, like, a montage of them traveling and a good portion, like, the first scene of that montage is them, like, on the Atlantic Ocean traveling by what looks like an equivalent of, like, one of Christopher Columbus's ships?
Yeah, they're on the Nina.
Yeah, and they're traveling. No, they're on the Pinta.
The Santa Maria.
Good Lord. What a reference. Hugh Jackman brings up the sea, and then Kate Beckinsale stops, and the camera, like, zooms in on her face so close you can see her nose hairs, and she's like, I've never seen the sea. And then you hear ocean noises in the background. Like, what the hell was that? This scene of her talking about the ocean with the camera so close to her face is so strange. It made me wonder if like that was a reference to something. Do you think that's like from the 30s?
You're like, this had to be done. There has to be some artistic background.
Like, this is so out of place.
There's no other scene like it in the movie, that's for sure.
I don't know.
By the way, in my notes, when she said that, I wrote LOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLOLO Okay, so next, I guess Dracula and the Brides of Dracula are really bugging him to have a child. And
Typical.
Biological clocks ticking.
Typical.
They're immortal biological clocks.
So apparently the way that they go about doing this is they set up what look like the eggs from the Alien series, and they set up thousands of them all over the castle. I don't know if they're laid or they're built, or I
really look like an alien oozed them out of some weird orifice and slapped them all over the wall.
Right, but I haven't seen the Brides of Dracula transform into any being that could produce anything like that.
No.
So
a giant pulsating slug.
Giant pulsating slug. Yeah, that's what it looks like. And so apparently what comes out of these egg sac uterus scrotum things are like these miniature
little demons.
Miniature like impish demons kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm just really confused about like what needs to happen here. They need to have a human being like in their possession that's having like electricity flowing through them and then into these eggs after they're fertilized by Dracula. What does he fly over them and just like
a fish?
Yeah, like a salmon and like fertilize them? Like I don't understand.
I got the impression that they were already fertilized, but because they're all dead, they can't have a living baby.
These babies were born in a womb tomb.
Yeah, thank
born you. Born dead. We come to find out that Dracula's driving force is he wants to use Dr. Frankenstein's cutting-edge technology to resurrect his progeny, his babies, because they're born dead, and he wants to use what Frankenstein used to create his monster to give the divine spark to his babies, correct?
But to do that, he needs some type of human element or key.
Yeah, this is what I don't get. Let's
like
kind of,
at
first,
almost.
Yeah, let's well, let's break this down. What is it exactly that brought Frankenstein's monster to life?
I thought it was literally a soul.
Your theory?
I thought it was just electricity.
I thought it was just electricity too, like kickstarted his heart.
If that was true, then wouldn't these monsters be able to exist indefinitely?
I mean, Frankenstein's monster, though, clearly had something, in this version at least, clearly had like something mechanical in his head, right? I mean, those lights were going on when he was moving around.
There was some sort of green orb.
Yeah,
too.
There's something going on in there that I thought was like mechanical in nature.
Right. Is that what gave him life, though?
I thought that it needed the extreme electric charge from a lightning bolt to jumpstart it and get it going.
Then if that was the case, why wouldn't they just forego having any type of human being or living organism as like a, I don't know, conductor or mediator between the electricity and these organisms?
I don't know.
It didn't make sense. Like, to me, I thought it was like the electricity would pass through this person and part of their soul would get imprinted on all these things, and that's what gave them life.
Let's tweet at Steve Summers. See what he says.
Yeah. Tweet him. Hashtag soul.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what the theory is behind this.
I never assumed that Frankenstein's monster has a soul. In fact, it doesn't make any sense to me that he would have a soul. Whose soul would he have? Like little pieces of peoples together to make one cohesive
seven different
soul?
Souls?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. He can't have a soul. He's an undead creature.
Like one giant Horcrux.
He just wants. Oh my god!
You went there.
You went there.
Didn't Frankenstein just wake up at the beginning of this movie?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How does he know all these plot details?
Like what?
That he knew everything.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's like, Dracula needs me. I'm the key. If you cared about your race, you'd kill me.
He's like, he has thousands of offspring in other locations. How would he know that?
He only killed one of his brides. There's still thousands more.
How does he know he have any brides?
How does he know that he killed them? How does he know that he killed one of them?
I have no idea.
He gets the radio in his cave. On the news, I don't know. The last remaining harpy kidnaps Kate Beckinsale. So Van Helsing makes a last ditch effort deal with the devil and decides to meet Dracula in a very public place. So they go to a costume ball in Budapest. Fidelio. That's my code word for this thing. It's Fidelio. That's what it looked like. Everybody was wearing their masks. There's a guy balancing on a giant ball playing the violin.
That had to be so difficult to achieve.
I actually do like this kind of aesthetic of like the masquerade ball. And
it looked cool, but then they all started dancing in unison. Like they practiced for like 4 hours before, like their group dance.
You didn't like the Thriller scene in this?
No, no. It reminded me of oddly enough, like She's All That. When they all start dancing, that dance together at the prom. Oh, and you're like, what do these kids do? Practice this after school?
Oh, jeez. I think you dropped a bomb in here.
I was just waiting for a scene of Usher behind the behind the instruments being played.
So let's just skip to the end. They find this magic mirror, and it's a portal to Dracula's nether dimension, pocket universe, wherever his castle is, in the frozen, like the Himalayas, wherever the hell it was. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's in the
it's in Hoth somewhere. So that's where the portal leads.
All right, let's just jump to the final fight. So they go through to Dracula's
pleasure palace.
I don't think anything pleasurable was going on there, but they go to Dracula's pleasure palace, and it's at this point where Dracula and Hugh Jackman are going to have, I guess, their final showdown after the 500 whatever years that they've whatever been battling.
So is Van Helsing an angel? Is that what they're implying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did they say it flat out?
Yes. He says you're the left hand of God, mm-hmm. Gabriel.
Yeah.
The friar said that when they were back at the castle.
He brought up the hand of God. The friar did.
Yeah.
But I don't remember them explicitly saying that you are an angel.
No, didn't Dracula bring that up?
I think so.
He did.
Yeah.
He started to explain his backstory, and Van Helsing's like, no, some things are better left unsaid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to know.
Yeah, they are, actually, because this is stupid.
What is stupid?
So he's an angel?
Can you even kill him at this
Can
point?
Can an angel become a werewolf?
If he's an angel, what is Dracula? A demon? Because he was human at one point.
The son of the devil.
Is he?
Yeah.
Because the whole story is that Dracula was like the last member of their family. And then once he's dead, then they can all wink at you from heaven and everyone can rest.
Hugh Jackman, the werewolfism takes over. He rips his skin off.
But luckily,
fun fact about this scene. This was originally supposed to be a Hugh Jackman nude scene. But Stephen Sommers thought it would be too distracting to see Van Helsing's ass in this movie.
I agree with him.
So they added CG loincloth pants to him. Did you notice?
Yeah, he looked like his weird Bruce Banner a Hulk episode.
His pants were kind of sliding around in like a weird way. Fake loincloth.
I'm sorry. I must have missed that. I guess I wasn't looking for it.
You're going to have to watch the movie again now.
Yeah, to stare at his ass while he's transforming.
Yeah.
I will say that Hugh Jackman as the werewolf looked way better than the other guys as werewolves.
They put the effort into that one?
Oh, yeah. He looked pretty cool.
He did.
I liked this final fight. It was brutal, like them scratching each other and throwing each other around and stuff. I like that. It's pretty well done. I liked Dracula's final form.
At this point, I just wanted the movie to be over.
Isn't that how we felt about The Mummy?
At this point, it's what, like 2 hours in?
Yeah.
More than.
Stephen Sommers, please. Hour and a half.
Yeah, no more than that.
All right, so Van Helsing rips Dracula's throat open, rips to shreds, kills him. And then Kate Beckinsale runs in. She has the cure for werewolfism.
But dies.
Because Hugh Jackman goes berserk and charges her and like kills her in a fit of
unbridled fury.
Yeah, so he accidentally kills Kate Beckinsale, but she injects him with the serum and cures him. Whatever. All right, so this movie ends with Hugh Jackman giving Kate Beckinsale an impromptu funeral.
How is he an angel? So is he even banished to Earth? Has he been punished?
Yeah. He pulled a legion and
cut his halo off, and now he's human.
What is that backstory? We got nothing on that. We're told basically he's an angel on Earth in human form with no memory.
And he's frail and like vulnerable.
And this movie ends with a delightful final shot.
It's kind of expect her to like wink at you.
You see Kate Beckinsale's giant face floating in the clouds.
Like up into the sun almost.
It is atrocious.
I was waiting for there to be Teletubbies on the ground.
Yeah, there was going to be a baby's face in the sun laughing at you.
All right, so that's it. That's Van Helsing.
No,
no, no,
no, no, no, no, no, you're skipping Frankenstein. side. Kevin, you have to set this up.
So after we see Kate Beckinsale's face hover up into heaven, we get a picture of Frankenstein on a little wooden raft.
How is
rowing.
He holding him up? He's like, he weighs like a ton.
This thing wouldn't stay afloat with us on it, let alone Frankenstein. He's like 9 feet tall. He's just rowing off into the distance.
To the new world, I guess.
Yeah, the new world. to settle the Americans.
Carol, would you watch a Frankenstein movie where you see where his ship takes him?
I would have to. I would have to know where he's rowing to.
Like, what if a storm hit him?
The white squall came and knocked him over.
Like, his boat was like the size of like a cracker because it's so small.
It reminded me of a boat that a mouse would make out of like matchsticks and like a straw.
Like a little kid would build that boat like to play, you know.
I think there was a boat like that in Feifel Goes West.
All right, so that's it. That's Van Helsing. The end. All right, so let's find out what the real critics have to say about this movie. It's empty calories. There isn't a single nourishing, non-synthetic sequence in the entire movie. Not a scene, not a line, not a look. David Edelstein, Slate.com. This moronic abomination is not a movie. It's just a noisy, nasty, and repulsive video game / theme park / haunted house ride designed to appeal to the offspring of warlocks and trolls. Rex Reed, New York Observer. And finally, looks like a movie assembled by a room full of computer geeks munching Doritos and playing Wolfenstein in between stints of designing Dracula's fangs.
What the hell does that mean?
Bill Mueller, Arizona Republic.
I think Bill Mueller's a little jealous.
Wolfenstein?
Yeah, he wants to be in a room eating Doritos playing Wolfenstein 3D.
Okay, guys, this movie currently holds a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes. Is it really that bad? Kevin.
You know, I haven't thought about my rating until just now, actually. Yes, it is that bad. That's a lock.
That's my
Kevin, lock of the week.
Kevin.
That's my cold, hard lock. I really want to give this movie a 2 because I think it's better than some of the 1 material we've seen here. But I think I'm going to go with a 1. It just has no redeeming value. Like, I would never... Who would want to watch this? Who would enjoy watching this? It's not really for kids or adults, right? I mean...
G.I. Joe.
Okay, yeah, there's your parallel. It's G.I. Joe again. I don't know who the audience is for this movie. It's just, I don't know, maybe campiness is lost on me, but if this was what the movie they wanted to make, it just seems misguided.
I understand that it is campy and maybe it goes about it the wrong way, but maybe there is no specific audience for this movie.
It just exists in space. For aliens to watch someday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's on Voyager 3. They're gonna put it on Voyager 3.
On a golden disc.
On a golden disc and send it out of space. No, I understand that. And I also understand, but at the same time, as I was watching it, I didn't want to kill myself. And there was a lot of...
That's your rubric now? I didn't want to kill myself.
I feel like at this point...
What does
show,
that say?
I feel like at this point of the show, we've watched movies that are so bad where I literally wanted to end my life.
Contemplating suicide.
I was caught... And this movie, I didn't have that. I was like, this is really unenjoyable, but I don't want to die.
You jumped off the stool at the end of this one. You're like, not this time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I would be there with you. I really wanted to give this more than a 1.
I think I'm going to give it a 2 just because I wasn't angry at the movie. Like, that's like a definitive 1. I'm either angry at myself for having to exist and watch this movie. I'm angry at God for creating me, so I have to watch this movie. Or I'm angry at the movie itself. But that didn't happen to me this time. So I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5.
Okay.
With a caveat. Don't.
Don't ever watch this movie.
Don't watch this movie with anybody else, okay? Because, I don't know, maybe we'll remind you of how bad. Or they'll remind you.
Okay, as for me, is it really that bad? Yes, I think we've made it abundantly clear. Yes, this movie is that bad. I feel as if that high I've been riding from Resident Evil, it's wearing off. It's wearing off on me because this is a hot, steamy 2 out of five. This movie just was. It was in one ear, out the other.
One ear out the other.
I pointed to my eyes.
Yeah, Joel pointed to his eye, and then when he said out the other, pointed to his mouth.
I think I'd be there with you guys too, but it's just so long. If it was an hour and a half, easily a two.
Yeah.
But two.
It wasn't Waterworld. It wasn't Waterworld territory. It wasn't Whiteout.
See, it was too long, it was too campy, the acting was really bad, it wasn't that interesting. But then they can hide under the umbrella of saying that it was on purpose. Like it was an homage.
See,
right?
That's why I'm giving it a two, because Sommers tried to do something artistic. He like a two for the effort, maybe, is like a good way to put it.
Okay.
All right, so there you go, Van Helsing. All right, so we got some voicemails. I'll play those for you right now.
To listen to your messages, press 1.
Hey, guys, this is Josh from Tulsa. I haven't talked to you in a while, but I had to call in when I heard Van Helsing was the next movie because I cannot recall being so disappointed when I went to the movies. I read the bad reviews, and I knew better, but I have always had kind of a, you know, like, thing for Stephen Sommers movies. I don't know what it is. I actually liked The Mummy, even though it was dumb, but it was kind of fun to watch. And I even liked that Deep Rising movie with the underwater monster. It was dumb as hell, but it was still kind of fun to watch. And they're just, his movies are kind of like big budget B movies. So when I saw Van Helsing, I was like, oh, that's not bad. And Hugh Jackman in it, I was a big Wolverine fan. So, you know, that was before the Wolverine movie, which really changed my whole opinion on that. But anyway, I think it's Hugh Jackman in it and Stephen Sommers. It might be a fun movie to watch, even though it's probably dumb. And I was just, I couldn't believe how bad it was. I was like, the effects were terrible. Like, the digital effect werewolf was awful. And then I was like, well, at least if they went digital effect with Frankenstein, which they didn't do, they went makeup, and that looked awful, too. All of it was terrible. Plus, you had Kate Beckinsale, who has the personality of a grapefruit. I mean, I couldn't get into it at all. So, I think Stephen Sommers kind of wore off, and then he made G.I. Joe, and then I was like, all right, I think we're done here. So anyway, that was what I thought of Van Helsing.
Hey guys, it's Crystal again from Phoenix. Sorry I didn't reply on the last two movies, but I like you guys, but I don't like you, and I put myself through that shit. But anyway, I've seen Van Helsing 1,000 times because my parents think it's a good movie. I think a little bit differently. I think it's a good movie, but it's a piece of shit at the same time. It's one of those movies where you watch it when you're like, I really don't want to think while I'm watching this movie. You know, maybe it's like when you have a hot date over, you're like, I want this for background music. Well, I try to, you know, make out. But the reason the movie's bad, they have freaking Hugh Jackman, and he's all dressed up, and he's supposed to be Van Helsing. And they send him to fight this vampire. But then, instead of making Dracula some sophisticated villain, they found this dude who was like a pimp slash taxi driver with this horrible hair. And they're like, you're a modern Dracula. And I was just like, this is the worst villain ever. I'm more scared of the chicks than I am with him. They can at least turn into something halfway decent, you know? But then, you know, they start working on the Kate Beckinsale part of the plot. And I was like, any scene with her in it is so horrible. I want to kill myself. And finally they get to the end where they're like, instead of him just being Van Helsing, which would be fine, Van Helsing's a vampire hunter, it makes sense for him to be there. They're like, no, he's really the Archangel Gabriel. It made no sense. It did not have to be in the movie. It made no freaking sense. I don't know why they put it in there. After seeing the pimp Dracula, I was like, whatever, I can get past the pimp Dracula, I can get past the Kate Beckinsale's horrible acting, but I cannot get past making the plot about the Archangel freaking Gabriel, where you can just make it about Van Helsing, because he's a vampire hunter, he's supposed to be there. Anyway, that was my big problem with the movie. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Bye.
Hey guys, this is Scott in St. Louis. Just wanted to call and give my 2 cents on Underworld. Yeah, I got this movie from Blockbuster on DVD a while back when they had their whole 3 for $20 or 4 for $20 or whatever. And I don't remember what else I bought, which probably doesn't fare well for those movies. But yeah, I got Underworld. Never seen it before, and I remember watching it and I liked it. It was pretty good if you're into like the werewolf vampire kind of, you know, Rob Zombie goth kind of theme movie. I remember what I liked the best was the monster effects. They were really good. The werewolves were cool, and the bad guy was a cool dude. I really liked the character, and then he turned out to be, like, the good guy, but I wasn't really sure if he was a good guy or a bad guy, and, overall it was a good movie, except the end. I didn't really like the werewolf-vampire hybrid fight against the, like, main leader good guy, bad guy, whoever he was. It just looked like Vince McMahon directed it or something, or produced it. Yeah, it was very WWE. And, yeah, but besides that, I thought it was a pretty good movie. I'll give it 3 out of 5.
Hey, guys, I listened to your podcast on Underworld, and you were talking about perspective on friends and family. Well, there was a guy that I've been friends with since I met him when I think it was like 5 or 6 years old, and I'm 26 now. He moved into a house next to my grandmother's, and so I've been, you know, friends with him over 20 years, and we were flipping through the satellite dish one day, and I seen Pulp Fiction, and I said, you know, it's one of the best movies of all time, and he told me it was stupid, and I don't know, I just can't look at him anymore. I hadn't talked to him like probably more than a year or two, and every time I just look at him, I just see red, because it's just like, how, you know, like Pulp Fiction, and he thinks that Fast and Furious is one of the best movies ever made, and it's, I just can't even talk to him anymore. So I figured that was a pretty good story. And I also sent y'all a, I don't know if you ever got it, but I think I sent you a message on something about your Pretty Got Fingered review. And I'm sorry that I sent that hateful message, but I was angry after listening to y'all's review. So have a great day. Maybe I'll get on the podcast, maybe not, no matter. But, yeah, I mean, I totally lost a friendship over Pulp Fiction, and I haven't regretted it since. Talk to you later. Bob, this is Adam, and I'm from Wallace, Georgia.
End of message.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, let's read some listener mail. Brian writes in, talking about Van Helsing. Okay, understand up front that I like The Mummy a lot. It was a good, dumb, fun time at the movies for me. Low expectation plus loud action equals fun. Then comes The Mummy Returns. My God, what a drop from one to the other. I say to myself, you got your hopes up. Of course it sucked. The Mummy would have sucked too if you didn't think it would. It was with those lowered hopes that I bought, with real money, a ticket to see Van Helsing. If The Mummy was crap, The Mummy Returns was shit, and going down that mine shaft, Van Helsing was steaming shit. if the steam itself was brown and stuck to you forever. Someday when I'm older, I'll send a young loved one out for milk or something. When they get back, I'll be dead. And it was... And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't watched this movie. Thanks.
I'll send a young, like, said when he killed himself. Like, he sent them out for milk. He's just had
Thanks, Steven Sommers. And a huge ass hat. You shortened my life. Wow. Oh, there you go. Good email, bro.
There's no way that that didn't take that person less than 30 minutes to write that out. They thought about that.
He brought his A game to the table. Okay, long-time listener Laura writes in. She says, hey guys, a couple of years ago I watched Van Helsing on DVD. The whole Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein's monster thing seemed like something thought up by a little kid who's grabbing every action figure he's got and shaking them at each other, making them fight. Take that, Dracula. Pew! Oh yeah? Well, here comes my friend the Wolfman. Oh no, I'll get you! Pew, pew, pew! Plus, it looked like an Avid workstation had thrown up all over the movie. All the Hugh Jackman screen time in the world couldn't have prevented me from shutting it off halfway. Brandon writes in about Underworld. The werewolf vampire hybrid looks just like the guitarist Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit. Someone else noticed this, right? Or is it just me?
I noticed it. Yeah, he did.
Lee writes in about House of Wax. Hey guys, did you know that Paris Hilton guest starred in an episode of Supernatural?
Yes.
How would you know this? You watched Supernatural, huh?
I read Paris Hilton.
One Tree Hill. She played a monster that was impersonating Paris, who insulted the real Paris Hilton. If you like seeing her die in House of Wax, that's super...
That is the most meta thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's you said Paris Hilton is not meta in that House of Wax episode. Look at this.
Yeah, in Supernatural, did she write that?
Yeah.
Oh.
She wrote her own script, right?
All right.
If you like seeing her die in House of Wax, please check out this link, and he has a YouTube clip of it. Basically, what happens is Jensen Ackles' character joked that he never saw House of Wax, which gets a confused look from Jared Padalecki. Jared then proceeds to cut off Paris's head. That's super meta right there. Oh, and he comes to write it, and he says that he's from Sydney, Australia.
Oh, sweet.
There you go. Okay, Margaret writes in, and she's from Chile, if you recall. She says, she has a couple of questions for us. All right. Inspired by some of the responses given by listeners in the most recent podcast, is there a movie that you watched as a kid that really left you traumatized, disturbed, scared for a long time?
Yeah, the movie that I watched that actually traumatized me was probably Ghostbusters 2. I think I was...
That's bizarre.
Is it? I think it was 5 or 6 when I watched that the first time, though.
Was it Vigo scared you?
You know what?
His Throne of Blood? His Season of Evil?
Yeah, it was his Season of Evil. It was like the river of slime and then the train coming through that actually bothered me.
Okay.
And I remember my father kind of like trying to force me to watch it. And I think like maybe the lack of control, me not being able to like leave if it bothered me, maybe made it worse. So thanks, Dad. You really ruined it for me.
The flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz freaked me out when I was a kid.
That freaks a lot of people out.
Yeah, that freaked me out.
Like, that's probably the most common one I think I've heard.
And another one was, I don't even know what this movie is. For all I know, it could have been a made-for-TV movie, but when I was a little kid, I was all alone, and there was this movie about this woman who kidnapped a kid, and I think I was, like, the same age as the kid at that moment, and it really... freaked the hell out of me that I was gonna get like kidnapped by some lady. Really?
What did she do to the kid?
I think she was like psychotic and thought that like it was her kid. So she like took him and was like pretending he was someone else. Or not pretending, but like thought he was someone else. And he was like, no, it's not me.
That sounds like a Lifetime original movie.
It probably was. It was scary.
Hey, listeners. If you know what movie terrified Kevin here, email us.
I think Judith Light was in it.
I don't know. She was the mom from
Who's the Boss?
So if you know what Kevin's talking about, yeah, it's that bad at gmail.com. Let's see if we can figure this out.
Yeah, because we don't have like IMDb.
I'm not even going to bother. I'm going to crowdsource it. See if we can figure that out. Okay, my movie that terrified me when I was a kid was Fire in the Sky. I was probably like 7 or 8 when I saw that. When those aliens kidnap that guy and do those experiments on him, the best way I could describe this is, do you remember in 300 when that guy got kicked down the well and he fell into an infinite abyss of darkness and nothingness?
Yeah.
Try to imagine my id, ego, and super ego in my brain. Like, my mind just like fell into a pit. I'm so traumatized. So that's what happened to me.
Was it the scene where he was actually in the ship and they were...
Yeah, when they were, like, drilling through his eye.
Yeah,
that destroyed me as a kid. That was so scary.
I remember watching that and just turning it off.
It's like, nope.
I am not going to submit myself to this.
And I'm like, a year and a half younger than you?
Yeah.
Right? At least I had the foresight to say, this is... I am too young for this.
I should turn it right off.
Okay. All right. Then she asks, so where do you really record the podcast? The thought of you guys sitting in a small room with a toilet by the side of the intercept sent me into fits of laughter.
You need to drink from somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she says, have a great week. Sorry about Kevin wallowing in his own self-delusions and his marathon being canceled. She empathizes.
I still am. No rescheduled date yet.
Are you still wallowing in your own insecure
delusions? All right, so where are we?
Joel is blindfolded right now. We actually change our location every week, so Joel never knows where we are.
It's a floating craps game. So the cops can't catch us.
Can't stop the podcast.
They're watching shitty movies. And we gotta stop this. All right, so here's where we are. We are in New Jersey. That may explain why we talk the way we do when we talk about the things that we do. We're from New Jersey, and if there's only me and Martin on the show, it's being recorded in my apartment, usually. If it's Kevin is there, we're at his apartment.
But this time,
plot twist,
Kevin is actually at Joel's apartment.
Yeah, so there you go. That's where we record the show. And there is a toilet in the room right next to
There's a constantly running toilet
24 hours a day. It never
just overflows.
It's just flowing out into the.
This is a great great image. Just spilling out onto my floor. I love that.
It's flowing into a fountain outside and getting recycled back up into the toilet again.
Aaron also asked the same question. Where in the world are Joel and Martin? The reason he asked is because he's in Pennsylvania, and he says he hopes that we're in the area because he wants to challenge us to a game of GoldenEye in the 64.
Isn't he the same guy that crouches?
No, he's a different dude. And he said the fact that he lives in PA, it'll make it a lot easier for him to throw proximity mines at you. Martin, here's an interesting question. See if we can dig back to the dawn of the podcast through our nascent days when we climbed out of the primordial ooze and grabbed our first microphone. See if we can answer this, because I don't remember.
Where do you come up with these analogies?
I choose my words very carefully.
No, you don't.
All right. Christine writes in and says, "Hey guys, I love your show and look forward to the new episode every Tuesday. Why do you guys release it on Tuesdays? It seems like a random day, but nevertheless, spices up my ordinarily boring day. Is it because DVDs get released on Tuesday? That's the only connection I can think of."
The reason that the episode is released on Tuesday is because we usually end up recording on a Friday, and it gives Joel buffer time, and it gives anybody who's going to record.
It's not enough buffer time.
Yeah, right.
Every night when I'm up late at night on a Monday and I have to go to work the next day, I rue the day I decided to make a Tuesday podcast.
Right. It gives us some time during the week to watch the movie because, I mean, we all work.
You know what the buffer is? The buffer is between when the episode comes out and when we actually record again.
Right.
So we actually can live a life in between, I guess.
It's interesting that this actually does take up quite a bit of time.
Yeah, a lot of my time.
Listen, it definitely takes up way more of your time than it does Minor Kevin's.
So she tosses in here. She goes, "Your laughter is contagious and you always make obscure references that the others always seem to understand. It makes the show so much better. How long have you guys been friends? How did you meet? Thanks for the laughs." That's a good question.
You and Kevin met.
7th grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met Kevin in 1997 in the 7th grade, and I met Martin in 2004 in college.
Yeah.
So that's how we met. That's how long we've been friends. You could do the math.
And I've been friends with Martin since episode 38.
Yeah. Yeah.
I met Kevin yesterday.
Okay, thanks for those emails, guys. If you want to contact us, you can reach us at yeahitsthatbad@gmail.com. And thank you for heeding my request in the last episode. Like, these are the kind of questions I want. More questions that where you just directly ask us something about ourselves or what our opinion is. It's more interesting for me to answer, that's for sure. As opposed to just listing movies or whatever, you know?
I like being introspective.
Sure. Navel gazing.
What you like to do?
Such a stupid image.
Okay, now it's time for the question of the week. And if you recall, last week's question of the week was, has your opinion of your friends or family been affected negatively because of their movie preferences?
Or has their opinion of you been affected negatively?
Yep. Apparently this got a ton of responses. People have been coming out of the woodwork for this one. So Steph says, "A friend commented that the Sex and the City movie had some good points on relationships, and I had to keep reminding myself that a friendship of 20 plus years should not be eroded by a movie. But if someone I know likes In Bruges, that's a totally different story." Andrea writes in and says, "There's a certain string of movies which I think belong to a certain A team of people who I know I could never, ever, ever sustain a friendship with. Their list of favorites usually starts with Fight Club. It's not a bad movie. I enjoy it, but it attracts the most brainless of people. Their lists usually continue with movies like American Pie, The Matrix, Boondock Saints. These aren't necessarily friendship deal breakers, but definitely wave a proceed with caution red flag as far as friendship sustainability."
That's absurd.
Yeah, that is outrageous.
Hey, Andrea, guess what? You just red flagged every male in America.
if you're gonna start out with Fight Club, that's like saying
and
like
The Matrix.
Yeah, and The Matrix. That's like saying like any group of people that likes The Notebook. That's a big red flag. It's like I can't be friends with any girl in our country.
All right, next up, Michelle says, "When I found out my boyfriend was a fan of The Life Aquatic, I definitely had some second thoughts."
What?
Again.
Oh,
again.
My God, again.
Again, absurd.
Absurd. Yeah. Of all the Wes Anderson movies, you pick Life Aquatic. I could see Darjeeling Unlimited. Maybe. And that I don't think that's that bad, but Life Aquatic's a great movie.
Anonymous said, my friend enjoyed the 1989 film The Wizard starring Fred Savage. Yet, I hate this a lot because it is nothing more than a 100-minute Nintendo commercial. Lucianne writes in and says, my best friend thought Resident Evil and Van Helsing were awesome. Glad to say that I could convince him with the 2 weeks ago podcast. Thanks. Bod Noir Babe said, my father hates any gangster movies, regardless of how high ranking they are. He thinks The Godfather is terrible and refuses to even watch Goodfellas. His reasoning is gangsters are not empathetic characters. They're scum, and he doesn't want to root for them. When I first heard this, I lost a lot of respect for my dad's taste of movies. All right, Al said, my best friend really likes Tron Legacy, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why. The movie bored the hell out of me. The characters were bland, the story was weak, the script was laughable, and the pace was unbearably slow.
We get Joel, along. What do you think about Tron Legacy?
I'll tell you later. All right. Shannon says, I was friends with a couple not much older than me that were stoners that had the oddest taste in film. They thought that Epic Movie was a hilarious comedy and wanted me to see it. I had, at that time, never seen any of the Friedberg and Seltzer films. I was laugh-free the entire time, wondering to myself, why is a film that has Cal Penn and Crispin Glover in it not making me laugh at all? While my friends were laughing their asses off. Other movies they thought were great, Mindhunters and The Heartbreak Kid, Farrelly Brothers version. Now, this is interesting. I want to segue this into something. See, his friends thought that a comedy was hilarious. He thought it was the stupidest thing he ever saw in his life. This is one of the main reasons why I am shying away from doing comedies on this show. For this very purpose. Like, I know I said, like, Van Helsing was supposed to be stupid, but, like, comedies, by and large, they're supposed to be stupid. Like, stupid things happen for a reason. So it's kind of redundant to nitpick them apart, which is why people, they request us doing comedies all the time, but I don't want to do them because, like, what's the point? Like, either you find it funny or you don't.
Yeah, comedies have the same type of, like, veil of protection that Van Helsing had in paying homage to, like, a film from the 1930s, and that is, they're supposed to be blah, 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 stupid or idiotic, and then you kind of, you can't critically review them in that way.
In a similar vein, Anonymous writes in and says, one of my friends thinks Adam Sandler is the funniest actor alive.
Okay, that's a problem.
Ever since hearing that, I won't watch movies with him. Oh, Kevin, this one's for you. Sonia writes in and said, my brother is a big fan of Death to Smoochie because he claimed it's one of the funniest movies of the last decade. I checked this out. It's got to be one of the most mean-spirited films I'd ever seen, and Robin Williams, Edward Norton, and Catherine Keener saw their talents wasted in this turd.
So I think, first off, that's absurd. Second of all, I think this kind of goes along with what you were just saying, though, right, about the comedies. Like, comedies are...
They're the most subjective thing ever.
They're for niche audiences, right? Like, a drama can be for almost anybody. Whereas comedy, like, there's different kinds of comedy for
stoner
people that
comedy.
Like specific types of comedy.
Yeah, that kind
if
of
you like dark comedy, you'll probably love Death to Smoochie. I love Death to Smoochie.
So do I.
You probably love American Psycho.
Yes.
I love American Psycho. I thought Death to Smoochie was hilarious. And I really like Danny DeVito's writing style.
Yeah. Shots fired.
Fired across the bow.
The Quaidinator writes in and says, being a movie connoisseur, a lot of people often roll their eyes at me when I mention films that most people haven't seen, but I'm sorry, I don't like shit. However, I do catch a lot of flack when I admit to liking The Notebook. Whatever. It's a movie about love. And being a member of Quaidism, love is what we do. Our love transcends all space and time and frozen tundras. Speaking of Quaid... I myself couldn't take my father seriously because he claims his favorite film of all time is Caveman, a film starring my lord and savior, Dennis Quaid. Even when watching it so young, its sophomoric nature really turned me off, and I'm not a fan of shit jokes and crotch shots. However, with the help of this podcast, I was re-Quaidinized. into the movie world and have since began to accept the film, which is still streaming on Netflix.
Does Quaidinator mean that they go around making people Quaid-like? Because if you're a Terminator, you terminate people. So you go around and Quaid people?
I was thinking more like the Thirst Quencher, like he shoots Quaid juice at them. Whatever that is.
No, I figured that he kind of acted emotionlessly at people. Like, whenever they, like, asked him, he'd be like, that's not okay. Like, he acted like Quaid. He equated them.
Paul writes in and says, I was dating this girl back in 2007. One of our first date movies was Children of Men. Bleak date movie. Well, we decided not to go out to a movie, but rather I would come to her apartment and we'd have a movie night. I came over for our date, and what I saw next nearly crippled our relationship. I was confused because it wasn't a rental. No, it was clearly a DVD that she had gone out to buy to own. It was White Chicks on DVD. And then we watched it for our date. Luckily, she has more redeeming qualities than her taste in movies, and we've been together for almost 5 years. There you go again with the comedy thing, right?
Yeah, we can't make a snap judgment just because someone owns the DVD.
I own a lot of
Joel,
crap.
There's some DVDs. There's some incriminating DVDs.
I own some turds
apartment.
Over there. So.
And you don't know what people have been given as gifts. Can't return, stuff like that.
As ridiculous as this is, I don't think that maybe you should make relationship decisions on
movie choices.
On movie choices.
All right, Frederick says, my friend wanted to stop watching The Blues Brothers after half an hour, saying it was a bad comedy. He wanted to watch Austin Powers 3 instead. He also considers jump scares the key ingredient in a horror film, and has called Alien the lamest horror movie ever, thanks to the special effects. Tim writes in and says, I have a friend that hates that I really enjoyed the awful but funny boat trip, and I give him shit weekly for loving the Darjeeling Limited. So we are at a stalemate. Except we all know that Darjeeling sucked, therefore I win. All right.
I disagree with that too.
I didn't think it sucked.
There's a lot of comedies are being brought up.
Yeah. This one's interesting. Danny, and that's with an I, so it's a girl. She says, I only take my husband to the theater for films that I know he will like. But at home, his opinion of me drops with each successive film. I love indie, foreign, action, pretty much everything. But when I suggested and followed through with watching Rubber, Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and Troll Hunter, he won't watch anything at home with me anymore until he gets to vet it himself. Well, I'll tell you this, Danny. He may not have liked Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, but show him Old Boy, the precursor to that. He'll like that. Iggy Star writes in and says, my best friend and I have different tastes in movies, but we sometimes share a common love for movies in the sci-fi action comic book genre. There is one thing that causes actual strain in our friendship. She refuses to watch certain movies for the most insanely stupid reasons. A glaring example is she has never and will never watch Batman Begins or The Dark Knight because so many people raved about it and the hype irritated her. One of the best comic book adaptations of all time, and she won't watch it because it is adored and critically acclaimed. But she'll fawn over any insipid and wildly popular movies like Twilight. So what do you think of that?
That's why I've never seen Gone with the Wind, because it was adored and critically acclaimed, so I knew that I probably wouldn't like it.
I am susceptible to this kind of reasoning as well, like when the hype machine gets so insane and like something's fans are really annoying and obnoxious. Mm-hmm. I just don't want any part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't like getting my hopes up for a movie, like letting people build up the expectations, because it hardly ever meets those expectations.
Yeah,
so it's good to give some time at least. I wouldn't say I would never watch it if that's what they're saying, but
we've all had a situation where we've built a movie up in our minds because it was hyped up and then were really let down when you finally did see it.
Watchmen?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. That gets continuously brought up for me. But that doesn't mean that the source material is bad, so at the very least, I can't say I would never watch it.
Okay. All right, and finally, Ted writes in with a very interesting comment. He says, there is a case where somebody's opinion of a movie changed and affected my opinion of them, and that's with you, Joel. I just found this podcast, and I've been listening to old episodes, and I generally agree with almost everything you say. However, in one episode, you talked about how in the summer of 2008, you had a perfect movie-going record. And that included Indiana Jones.
It was the Summer of Dreams.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, among them. I have yet to meet anyone that likes that movie, and I am of the opinion that the South Park episode that depicts George Lucas and Steven Spielberg graphically raping Indiana Jones multiple times didn't go far enough in demonstrating what a horrific piece of garbage that sorry excuse for a film was. Needless to say, Joel, you disappoint me.
Oh! Sick burn. Now that's an internet burn.
Burn ward. Pediatric burn ward.
Joel right now is getting transported via helicopter to St. Jude's burn ward.
Yeah, it's St. Jude's, the kids. So let me explain myself here. Kevin and I were talking about this in the past. Like, there are movies out there that our generation has this really fanatical attachment to. One of those movies is The Goonies, and you don't share that opinion, right?
No, I didn't watch it when I was a kid. For whatever reason, I skipped that one.
Yeah, okay.
I've lost it.
Now, for me, one of those movies is like E.T. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody loves that movie, but I don't because I didn't watch it until it was much later. So the reason I liked Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull is because I do not have the same level of fanatical devotion to Indiana Jones that everybody else of our generation does. I don't know what happened when I was growing up. I don't know. I like Star Wars better, I guess. I don't know. Even though they're not mutually exclusive or whatever, but I just don't care about Indiana Jones that much like everybody else does. I just don't. So when I saw this movie, I took it for what it was. I wasn't comparing it to everything that came before it. So it wasn't like, oh, they raped my childhood, like The Phantom Menace or whatever. I took it for a standalone thing. And I also recall that that movie starts off with him being blown up in like a fridge or something. And right off the bat, that told me like, this is not going to be a realistic movie. This is going to be a goofball, silly movie. And so I just ran with it and I had a fun time.
So even when the ship is taking off at the end,
I don't even remember.
You're okay with that?
I don't remember. So that was in 2008. I've only seen that movie once. If I rewatch it again, maybe what we'll do for the show, who knows? My opinion will probably change. I don't know. Who knows?
I actually read an article, I think it was today, where Spielberg did an interview and he actually said that with that whole jumping in the fridge to avoid the nuclear bomb thing was his idea, not George Lucas's. He takes credit for it.
That makes sense. That's like something he would do.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. Thanks for those responses, guys. As for the new question of the week, Leo writes in with a suggestion and he has a bit of a twist on one of the old questions of the week. And his twist is, in the past we did, can you name actors that you think are bad but they keep getting work? And I guess he was inspired by Stephen Sommers and M. Night Shyamalan. Can you name some directors which you think are bad but yet keep cranking out movie after movie after movie? So if you can come up with an answer to this question, head on over to yeahitsthatbad.com. Leave a comment on this episode's page with your answer. Okay, now is the time to announce the movies for the next Listener's Choice poll. And this time I decided I wanted to do another Netflix instant watch movies. So we're going sci-fi this time. And your choices are Tron Legacy versus
Pitch Black.
So Digital Jeff Bridges versus Analog Vin Diesel. Which do you prefer?
I prefer Analog Vin Diesel.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So head on over to yesthatbad.com where you can vote in the poll to decide between Tron Legacy or Pitch Black. As for next week's movie, we're going to watch a movie that has been in the works for a really long time. We shall be watching Top Gun.
I don't think I've ever seen it from start to finish.
Only the volleyball scene.
Yeah, just the volleyball scene.
Well, I've never seen Top Gun.
What?
Exactly. So I'm the perfect candidate.
I've seen it multiple times. I own it. It's vintage Tom Cruise.
I don't like you, Kevin.
Oh.
You're dangerous.
Okay, so if you've already seen Top Gun, give us a call at 973-797-9324. Give us a call, leave us a little mini review, and we will play it on the show. So thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you've heard, please consider subscribing. We have a new episode every Tuesday for no reason whatsoever.
There's no rhyme or reason.
Please give us a positive review on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews really do help out the show.
So everybody, please head on over to Facebook and click the like button. By clicking the like button, you let all your friends know about great podcasts like this.
Facebook.com/yeahitsthatbad. You can also follow us on Twitter at @yeahitsbad. And you can listen to the show on your non-iPhone or Zoom devices via Stitcher. You can get that at stitcher.com. Once again, thanks for listening to the show. See you next time.
Far away then, right? She's never seen the sea.
Yeah.
It must be really far away.
No, Transylvania's bordered by the sea.
How did they travel by sea if she's never seen the sea?
Like this scene.
One if by land, two if by sea.
Oh, okay.
It clears everything up.
All right.